This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We got a couple of things to get to here because, as you know, the 2 o'clock hour just flies by and there's topics we still need to discuss. And, of course, your calls as well at 800-919-3776. But we were talking about this off the air, and I know we mentioned it a bit yesterday, but now that it's, you know, it's starting to become a real thing, it's, to me, getting very interesting to kind of see how playing, how life without fans is really going to look. Now, we've seen it on different levels, but I mean, we're talking about the four major team sports now. I mean, these are 20,000, 30,000, NFL up to, 80,000. Like, these are real crowds now we're talking about.
You mean axe throwing wasn't a pressure?
No, axe throwing, yeah, you're not getting a lot of crowds for that. So, now it was just a statement put out by the mayor's office in New York City that New York City's on track to allow zoos to open at a limited capacity and professional sports without spectators starting next week under the new phase of the reopening plan. That's what the mayor announced today. So there's still formal approval by the state, but you expect that to happen. But phase four of the reopening for the city should be Monday. So they're saying, like, the botanical gardens and the zoos can open at 33% capacity. Production of movies and TV shows can proceed in the city as well, which is important, of course, to the economy. Professional sports like baseball can be played without fans in the stands. Here's my question. If you can have 33% capacity in a zoo, you can't have 20% capacity at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field? What's the difference?
I think what they're trying to lean on is the fact that the personnel that they have to bring in, and a lot of these teams are.
You can make masks mandatory in the stadium, can't you?
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is, I think this is really something that's being coming from these owners that's saying that they don't want, because it's a neutral. You're taking a risk and you're breaking even because you're paying people those work hours, the manpower that you have to bring in to be able to manage that 20,000 people in. And you're trying to figure out what those tickets prices are going to be, it probably just washes neutral. So why put anybody at risk if we're not making a profit? We know it's all about the almighty dollar. At least that's kind of what I'm hearing in the back channels as I'm, ear hustling on the side of these walls. They really don't want fans because it doesn't make sense, because now you have to bring in personnel to support them, and that could be just a wash.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. So it doesn't really benefit. Okay.
It can do nothing but hurt.
All right.
Because if you're breaking even and people get sick, then what are you going
to
do?
All right. Well, it doesn't matter what I have to say. This is what the rules are going to be. They're not going to allow people. I just, like, it's just straight. Like, you can have 30% capacity in a zoo. You can't have people in, like, sitting far apart from each other in a stadium. Whatever. Fine. I don't care.
What is this, like, NASCAR?
But what I do, yeah, well, again, you're seeing in NASCAR, they're putting 20,000 people in there. So, but let me ask you this, because I do think this is going to be interesting, and it's Steve Cerby brought up in the post, and it made me start to, the wheels started turning, how Giancarlo Stanton actually might play better because he won't have fans yelling at him, and that idea that, there's that pressure, come on, that exists. We've seen athletes come in here in New York. Look at Sonny Gray. Look at Javi Vasquez. Look at Randy Johnson. Like, you're talking about, there are some players who have come to New York and have absolutely melted under the pressure. You step out on the mound, wherever it is, out on the field, or you're at the batter's box, and you know the fans are already on your case because New York is, we just signed you, you better be great. Yeah. And if you're not great in your first at bat, you're going to hear from us. It's always that. And what is it? Michael Kay always says this, you have to have your Yankee moment. And until you do, you're not embraced yet. Tino needed his Yankee moment. He's replacing a legend. He had to have it. He finally did. And then everything was fine after that. But there are some athletes that have come to New York and they've melted. Can't handle it, right? For whatever reason. Does that change? Like for Gerrit Cole, as much as he wants to pitch for the Yankees and wants to pitch in New York, and has pitched in big games, he's not gonna have any reaction at all. Nothing from fans, like, if he pitches great or pitches poorly. You're not walking off the... If you get replaced, you start a game. Let's say Hap starts a game and he gets spanked. First two innings, he's just smoked. They got to get him out of the game.
Yeah.
So he walks off the mound, and normally you're getting just, eviscerated heading to the dugout. He's going to have nothing. There'll be nothing other than teammates just, you know, giving them that, you know, hang in there, attaboy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You got it's a totally different environment now for baseball players in New York than ever before. Never mind the opponents who could come here, and you're hearing it from the crowd, especially the bleacher creatures when you're playing at Yankee Stadium. None of that's going to exist right now. So, Bart, I wonder how much that's going to change the game. And are there some athletes that are right now on the Yankees or Mets who will benefit the most from the fact that they won't have to hear it from the crowd? Ooh, Robbie Cano? Would it be Cespedes? Would it be Diaz? Who are some people that you feel like this year will benefit from the fact that there won't be fans in the building?
Well, I want to focus on the last one that you said, and Edwin Diaz.
Yeah.
You know, we know he had the stuff, and his stuff had movement, but it was getting hit. And for whatever reason, the same pitches that he threw out in Seattle just wasn't getting guys out. And I think that, you know, maybe it was the nerves, and maybe because things didn't go the way he wanted to, it just continued to compile, right? And then you look at, you know, the first name you said, Giancarlo. He's not had his Yankee moment. He's been a disappointment. We know that they have people that they want to spend money on and lock up long term. You know, would you rather spend that money right now on Mookie Betts that you spent on Giancarlo Stanton and be able to put Judge and Mookie Betts and put Mookie at center and be able to do that? You can easily move Hicks's contract, but it's those type of things, and that's in his head because he's almost a man without a country, so to speak. You don't see Giancarlo Stanton jerseys as much when you go to Yankee Stadium. He hasn't been embraced. They think
this guy
that he's
was an
overpaid.
MVP. Isn't it amazing?
Right.
He was an MVP.
And
it's like
year,
he's on
and
the
his
Yankees.
First year
and
wasn't bad.
He's persona non grata as a Yankee. He is not somebody that fans are excited about. There's no buzz about him. Nothing.
Right.
It's Judge. It's Cole. Glaber.
It's LeMahieu.
Stanton is a guy you forget he's on the team. This guy was an MVP. This guy hit 50 freaking home runs. Like, this guy's a monster. And nobody seems to notice that he's on the team, nor talk about him, or even expect he's going to play, which is hysterical.
If you don't have the crowd, you can see him maybe having that moment because he had a lot of non-pressure at bats. When he was down in Miami, he was able to swing freely, and he wasn't in impressive situations. So even though losing and going on losing streaks early in this type of season, with as short as it is, it's going to be pressure. But if he comes out and he gets in a groove, it's no consequence to him striking out. So he may go there and be able to swing freely and smoothly. And, I mean, come on. He was chasing some – I mean, he had some bad strikeouts. I mean, he was chasing stuff all out of the zone. You know what I mean? He settled down. And he had more plate discipline during the playoffs. But then now you hope that he can continue that and that he can get on a roll because he's a guy, more than any guy in this town, maybe – outside of Edwin Diaz, that needs a pat on the back and needs to be built up, that can't handle the criticism right now. And the fact that fans are booing him in his own stadium is going to give him that type of push that I believe that he needs. Now, you want to ask me if I've ever played with guys like that?
Yeah, I was going there next. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rabbit ears.
Kyle Bowler. I mean, he had a lot of pressure coming in. We were a team that was ready to win, a team that had success, and he made.
And you guys have the crowd right behind you. Like, when you're at the home bench, you've got people literally, like,
and
20 feet behind you.
I mean, like I told you, we lost about 3 points in a game that he had 8 turnovers himself.
Oof.
Eight. And the crazy thing is, his backup, we didn't have a backup that we thought could do better. But that was the pressure because it was all on him while we lost, or it was always perceived on him. And I had a teammate that I actually grew up with. Now, I played with 4 guys that I grew up with on the Ravens. Just we all grew up and graduated high school at the same time. Chester Taylor, Ron Johnson, and Javon Hunter, right? We all were on the same team. Ron Johnson had a tremendous first year. Tremendous, right? And then he dropped a pivotal pass. You know that pass that guy in the championship against the Steelers in Dallas, and it hit him in the chest, and he just dropped it. He was wide ass open. He did one of those. This dude went from being a promising star to being out of the league in 5 years. He dropped the ball, and he just could not catch anything. We used to call him Stoney Johnson off the Little Giants. Like, man, just imagine that as tissue. And maybe like we call him Hands of Stone. And listen, he's still a friend of mine now. He works for the Minnesota Vikings like broadcast. Ron Johnson, if you're out there, his dad was a great safety during the Steel Curtain years. He couldn't catch a cold. He got the ips, and we had to get him out of there, man. He never recovered. And I mean, recovered.
You have these guys, and they'll never admit it publicly. You never, like right now, if you did an anonymous poll of Yankee and Mets players, you will have some who are like, yeah, I could care less if there are fans in the building. They'll never say it publicly, but some, and I knew some athletes that I talked to that you could just tell, they had no time, fans will get on you. The minute you make a mistake, they start yelling at you. Like, you have the rabbit ears. Like, Rod on Twitter gave us some examples, and there's just some good ones. Kevin Brown, you remember how miserable he was with the Yankees. Kenny Rogers, another guy that always heard it from the fans. Yeah. Armando Benitez certainly heard it from that fan. Jason Bay as well.
Familiar
those are some good examples.
Because listen, we ran out of Familiar because we brought Familiar back and gave him $10 million when we should have been happy that we let his ass go. Brought him back, and now you want to talk about he losing weight. What's going to happen if the weight ain't the reason why you ain't getting guys out? I mean, he making top dollar.
It's crazy, but Stan is a good example.
A guy on the other side that's going to struggle from not being able to feed off the energy of Yankee Stadium.
That's a good one. Aroldis
Chapman.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy, man,
it's
that loves
up.
The moment. He's jacked up on Mountain Dew, man. And he gets that thing cranking
jacked
when he has that crowd. He kind of walks out like Wild Thing from Major League, man. You can see that little strut in his stuff, man. Dun, 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 dun. Hit the music. Here comes Chapman. He's already sweating. He's the king of the lip sweat. You know, the dude, like when you look up, man, he got sweat
already,
all on his lips.
Already salivating.
And it drips to his arm. He blow it off. Chapman's going to miss
it. Let's grab some calls on this. All right, let's take Andrew in Queens. Andrew.
What's going on, fellas? First of all, Bart, that is a fantastic Talladega reference, being all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I love it when you can drop that whenever. That is A+, my friend. Look, I might be in the small portion of Yankee fans, but Giancarlo, I've always been a fan of his. He's one of the guys I always watched, even though he wasn't on my team, and now he's on my team. The one thing I'm going to say is that last year was a complete lost year. You got to chalk it up as that. But the one thing that people that I don't hear talked about enough was in 2018, when you recall, literally almost everyone on the Yankees went down. Giancarlo played 158. He carried them, exactly. And I'll tell you right now, I do think this year, I think he realizes, hey, shoot, I lost a full year of playing time last year. You know, granted, all injuries, you know, you can't do anything about that. But I do think he realizes that, hey, he's on that Hall of Fame track. He cannot afford to have another lost year.
Great point.
And the fact that you don't have the Yankee fans giving him the A-Rod treatment, because that's what he's been getting. He's been getting that A-Rod treatment where, you know, he's a high-paid guy, and, you know, he's not.
Oh, the expectation. I mean, that's exactly it, Andrew. That's exactly it. It's he's getting that treatment because of the salary. No. Andrew, come on. It's fair. You get
but
that kind of money.
It's a high-pressure treatment.
But the Yankees didn't give him that money, though. The Yankees took on that money. They
didn't give him that contract. It doesn't matter. Fans think.
Fans look at how
much you're making, and they see your production. Andrew had a good call. I was cutting him off just because, you know, we got to keep the conversation moving. But he's not wrong what he said about how important it is for Stanton. But the idea that it's unfair criticism is absolutely wrong.
It comes with the territory.
It comes heavy as the head that wears the crown.
Yeah,
I mean that's basically how it goes. Isaiah's in North Bergen.
Yeah,
Isaiah,
let's go, Zeke. That's a great name. That's a great name, too. One
Isaiah
of my favorite people
in North Bergen, when we get
Zeke,
a chance.
Zeke, we're talking to you. Zeke, take us off. Take
Hello.
Us off mute.
Isaiah,
Hello?
What's up? Go ahead.
Luke, what up, Zeke?
You're... Yes.
Oh, all right. Yeah. How you doing, guys? Alan, before I get to my point, I just want to say you took my podcast idea with music and on sports.
Yo, if you listen to my show over the last couple of years, you would know that I have been kicking that around publicly on air for a long time. I would love to do it. And I'll tell you what, if we ever get to do it, Isaiah, you're one of the first guests.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate it, man. But I just want to get to Giancarlo. Like, that guy kind of took my point. It's kind of unfair. I mean, not unfair. I'm sorry, because he did have a lot of, like, bad strikeouts, bad at-bats at high-pressure moments. But then again, when everybody was hurt 2018, that year, I mean, he did carry, you know, the team. And, like, why isn't that considered a, you know, Yankee moment? Is it because it's not in the postseason?
Well, yep, because it probably. Was. He didn't come through in a high-pressure situation. That's when the Yankee moment comes. Who do you have more confidence in? Gleyber Torres up in that high-pressure situation or Giancarlo Stanton?
If I would say right now, definitely Glaber.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the point. So that says a lot because he's brought in to be that guy. He's brought in. I'd rather listen. If I got to pick somebody, that is long on the list before I go with Giancarlo Stanton. I'm saying, hey man, give me DJ LeMahieu. Give me Glaber.
Who would you want at bat for the win?
For the win.
Like for the win. I got a runner in scoring position.
For the Altuve. For
the Altuve. For the win. Who am I putting up there? Who is the guy that if you could choose? How far down the list do you go before you get to Stanton? How far down the list?
You're going Brett Gardner.
You said DJ. I think you're right about DJ.
You're going Brett Gardner before that because you know he can go there and make the pitcher work. He going to take 12 pitches. Mm-hmm. He going to make them work. He going to have
Gary?
A good eye.
What about Gary?
Gary is scary.
Gary, and Stanton are sort of the same because they're both wild swingers, you know?
Right. And you know Judge has great plate discipline. He's not going to try and be a hero. He's just going to sit there and say, walk me. I got faith in the guy behind me. What's Parakeet Man? I'd rather have Parakeet Man up there.
Oh my God. Encarnacion?
Yeah. I can't say his name. I can't roll my R's, man. I got to go hang out in the Heights.
Adam in Brooklyn, Adam.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Man, how you doing, Adam?
So with Bart, you know, Chapman, I think I agree with 100%. I think he will miss the fans the most. But, you know, I think everybody's saying right about Stanton. Stanton carried team in 2018, and he had a bad year in 2019. And I think we're putting too much on him too early.
Let me just I'm not hanging up. I just want you to understand. The question is, and that's what Steve Serby wrote, and I got my wheels turning about players that actually will play better because there aren't fans in the stands, is don't you think for Stanton, but for exactly what you said, there's a lot of, if you feel like, and some other callers too, unfair criticism of him, and you point to 2018 when he actually did help the team. So wouldn't you think, though, because you know that still exists with Yankee fans, and that means it probably still exists in his head too, that he might actually be more relaxed at the plate because there aren't people screaming at him, come on, Giancarlo, you make all this money, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but I just feel like the reason why he has been treated like this is because he had such a great year in 2017 that he was expected to come in and had a better year. Because if you look at his numbers in 2018, you know, there are pretty good numbers, but it's just not as good as the previous year. That's what I think he came in with, that, like, they're looking for him to be like the next guy to hit 70 home runs. I just think
completely
he came
fair.
With that.
It's completely fair, Adam, and thanks for the call.
Because 2017, he had non-pressure situations at bat. He was swinging freely because it was nothing on the line. So they want to see him do it under pressure situations. I tell you this, if I'm a Yankees fan, I forget when Stanton, because he's 30 this year, when is Stanton's opt-out year? Because ask yourself this, when that opt-out year comes, would you be happy if he opted out? Would you be sad if he opted out and went to the Dodgers? Or would you be happy if he opted in? Would you want him to opt in? Because you have to ask yourself.
If you're him, how are you opting out?
He hasn't done enough yet.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
He wouldn't opt out.
But he may just be so tired of dealing with the ridicule here in New York that he might say, I want to go to home sweet home and go play for the Dodgers. But this is what you have to ask yourself. Who is Giancarlo stopping you from getting? Because you couldn't get Manny Machado because you had that big contract there. You couldn't get Bryce Harper because you had that contract. You're talking about the sweet lefty and that short porch that would be perfect for that type of stadium. And Giancarlo, he barely plays, you know, defense. And so now he crowds up the DH spot.
Yep.
So now you got to figure that out. And then he can be a liability at times. And I know with the Green Monster, a lot of people are in left field. So you have to ask yourself those type of questions. Who is he preventing you from getting?
Well, he's got to. This will be an interesting year for him. There's no question about that. But once again, like I said, with nobody in the building, is there a less pressure that a lot of these players will feel because you're not hearing the crowd? Need the crowd. That helps you with the energy part. But also when you're on the road. And, oh, by the way, somebody tweeted this earlier, and I wish I can give him credit, but I don't see it on my screen. The entire Astros roster is happy that there aren't fans in the building.
Oh, absolutely.
That part probably true. I saw a story where there's some college coaches that have not yet, like, taken a pay cut. I know I gave, ready? The list of coaches who have whose pay has not been changed include the two highest paid coaches in their respective sports. Are you surprised that Dabo Swinney is one of them?
We storm Normandy. How you gonna short me on my money? I can't feed my family off $9 million a year, even though I don't pay for nothing.
He makes $9.3 million. The other is John Calipari, who earned $8.2 million. Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Rick Barnes, Chris Beard. Yeah.
Now, what you should do is read the same coaches from that university that has taken pay cuts or furloughs. That would be interesting because one thing they say, oh, we kept
everybody's
all our coaches.
How about this? Two of the highest paid coaches, Calipari and Tom Herman from Texas, the football coach, have not taken cuts even as their universities announce reduced pay for other employees, furloughs, or layoffs. Is there any conscience at all? Like, any?
At least tell them to defer it, man. Like, don't worry, man. You can give it to me next year.
Finish the season. Come on now. And you don't even know if you're going to play in the fall. No wonder why these guys are fighting about. You heard Orgeron, right? I mean, country needs football. We need football. We got to play football.
You know,
to play football. We got to play football.
You know who Orgeron sounded like? He sounded like the guy that was the assistant coach for Bobby Boucher.
Oh, the water boy. Oh,
water
absolutely. Boy. He had no idea what he was saying. But his players love him, though. You got to say that. You got to admit that part. All right, I got audio files coming up here in a minute. Let's grab some calls on the topic we were just talking about, which is no fans in the stadiums. Yankees and Mets are going to play this weekend scrimmage. And obviously next week, opening day, basically less than a week from today, opening day, and there'll be no fans. And we were thinking about it, and again, I credit Steve Serby because he wrote about how Giancarlo Stanton is probably going to benefit from this, not having to hear from the home crowd. But we thought about players from the past who melted playing in New York because of the crowd, but what players today might actually be more comfortable not having fans in the building? They'll never admit it publicly, but there might be some that are happy that they're not there. Johan in the Bronx. What's up, Johan?
Hey, guys. Before I name my play, I just wanted to make a quick point with Stanton. He's used to playing in an empty stadium when he was at the Marlins, so it's a
good
benefit
point.
Playing in an empty stadium.
Good point. Well done.
The guy I wanted to name, which is pretty interesting, a former Cy Young Award winner, is Rick Porcello. Coming to New York, under the radar signing in free agency, Syndergaard has Tommy John. He probably signed as a 4 or 5 guy between him and Walker to fill out the back end of the rotation. But with the injury, he can step up. If he has a pretty solid year, he can maybe re-up as a number 3 or 4 starter for them down the line.
I saw he'd love that. I don't know if crowd affects him as much as just
talent.
He's
from here, right?
Is Porcello?
I think he's from Morristown or something. He's from out here, I think.
Local, yeah. Well, the bottom line, and thanks, Johan. Like again, there are some guys that just melted playing here. Like, you saw it. And I can't get over Sonny Gray. I can't get over how good.
Then he goes to Cincinnati.
He's great. Yeah, he's fine now. He's an all-star. He's great. I mean, the guy couldn't find the strike zone in New York.
I've never heard somebody openly.
Seriously. Hey, Sonny, like, throw it over here. Throw it here. Just throw it here, please.
But Cashman made it. He didn't make no bones about it. He said he's available. We trying to get him up out of here.
Yeah, you have to.
New York ain't the place for everybody. Point. But, I mean, the fact that he just openly said it, after giving up so much for him to trade for him.
Yeah. Let's take JR in Jersey City. JR.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Okay. This goes back a little while. There was a picture. He was number one on the meltdown list. Believe me, if you see videos of him, it's the picture that the Yankees got from San Diego Padres.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Whitson.
Yes.
Okay, I gotta go. So I'll just leave it right there, man.
Thank you.
On the meltdown list.
No.
You're just gonna do a drive-by.
He's right though. Ed Whitson was supposed to be a big Yankee acquisition in the mid-'80s, and was an absolute just disaster.
He's fun to hang out with, man.
Miserable in New York. Not happy. Like the whole thing was what a string of. I see that again. People forget being a Yankee fan in the '80s. After 81, wasn't good. No, especially the late 80s when the Mets, good, look at the Mets, isn't that fun? Fun.
Doc and Strawberry.
Yeah, isn't that great? And Max and the kid. And meanwhile, you got Don Mattingly and Pat Kelly. Like, what do you got?
You got your get back, though.
Like, what do you got?
You got your get back.
Yeah, no, it finally came around. But, dude, like, the fans need to understand that. There was a time. All right, there was a time. One more here. Julius in Morristown's got a correction. What do you got, Julius?
Uh-oh.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Big time fan, Alan.
Thank
you. Listen, first things first. That song you were that you played, Let's Get Ready to Rock. That's EPMD. That's Eric Sermon.
Well, no, that part of it is, but the song we played was Redman.
Yeah. That's right. But I thought you were trying to say it was something else. I'm like,
you said if you said Cypress Hill. You said
No. Not the Let's Get Ready. No. Time for no. The Let's Get Ready to Rumble part was definitely EPMD, but when he says time, that part where they're sampling time for some action,
that's
Cypress Hill.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Got it.
Okay, all right. So, all right. I just wanted to wait. Say that one more time, Julius.
Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
No.
Who's say right?
I'm wrong. Tell me I'm right.
Alan, you're right. Hey, fellas, listen.
Correction.
No, everybody is rightfully, you know, on standing. You know, he hasn't come through in the clutch. I think with this 60-game season, I, on the one hand, think it's going to be super exciting because of the 60 games. I picked Stanton this year for somebody to watch out for. Okay. I think he's hearing the chatter. You know what I mean? He's listening, and he's ready. He's ready. It's kind of like Cam Newton in baseball right now.
I hope both of them got a pair of copper fit socks, you know, for his calf, because I don't want to hear nothing about my foot hurt.
Oh, man. No, that's a hot take, though. See, I talked to Meredith yesterday, and I asked, could Gleyber Torres be an MVP? But Stan, again, like,
it's, somebody it get somebody get year. Hot, you don't have to sustain it. If you get hot and you just get hot early.
60 games.
Yeah, your numbers going to look great.
All right, we've got a couple of hits for you right now on Audio Files.
The Audio File.
And as we mentioned, as we're talking baseball, Luis Rojas with the Mets has an update on Jacob DeGrom and his back.
He came in and got some treatment this morning. According to him, he didn't have to be much, but he felt very loose. So it's basically stayed on the same words that he's used in the last few days, as far as saying that it was tightness, and then with the treatment he got looser. So today was like a regular, it felt like a regular side for him, like the same feeling as throwing the ball as usual. I think he threw 17 pitches in the bullpen, felt good. So we're gonna have him Sunday. We're hoping for a live BP sim game, here for a stay back group, maybe in the 50-60 pitch mark, something like that. So that's what we're hoping for Sunday.
All right, so you won't see DeGrom against the Yankees in the scrimmages, but sounds like he is on track, though, to be there a week from today for opening day for the Mets against the Braves.
Just back tightness, man. Get that worked out. Get stretched.
Oh, come on.
Out.
Like I said,
I wasn't concerned with it.
Was there ever a time you're like, I forgot he had a back issue? He never, ever. Once his little back issue, you won't.
But low back early when you start early and try to get back to like action. I worry about hamstrings and calves because those don't go away. Those take 6 to 8 months and 6 to 8 weeks, and you usually don't have the time to rest that long. A back can just be something like a little tightness in his hamstring or something like that. You know, so I'm not concerned with DeGrom. DeGrom's gonna do what DeGrom does. He's gonna come out and he's gonna be in the conversation, for all the postseason awards, and he's going for his third in a row. We know what we're talking about, and it'd be interesting to see who's the best pitcher in New York, Gerrit Cole or Jacob DeGrom, because right now it's DeGrom's to lose.
It's gonna be a fun rivalry. There's no question. It is gonna be a fun rivalry. Before we go on to the next one, John on Twitter wants me to know, you got Ricky Henderson, you got Willie Randolph, Don Mattingly, Dave Winfield, Mike Pagliarulo, Pags, Dave Rigetti, Ron Guidry, the 80s Yankees won more games between 80 and 89. If there was a wild card then, .. John, I lived it. Okay. Yeah, did they finish second in the division a couple of times? Did they finish second in the division a couple of times, which was painful? Yes. But they were like 500. You know, they had a losing record at least twice in the decade that I can remember. But they were barely over 500. Were they competitive? Yes. Now, back then, the division winner was the only one that advanced. I understand that part of it. But if you're telling me that it was great to be a Yankee fan in the 80s because they never made the playoffs after 81, stop it. While the Mets were making the playoffs and winning championships, come on, man. Like, I lived it. Drove me nuts. Yes. And by the way, the team you're describing was the early 80s team. Late 80s? Wasn't this pretty. All right, trust me. All right, next up, out of baseball. Moving on now to the story we led with, which is a big story in sports right now. The Washington football team and the report out of the Washington Post with allegations about sexual misconduct in that organization, and Dan Snyder, the owner of the team, putting out a statement, and they're having an independent investigation now into all of this. Liz Clark, who's a reporter for the Washington Post, one of the reporters that put out this report, was on Spain and Company and talks about what this story tells you about the Washington football team.
And in our story, although it's about the experience of 15 young women being harassed, there's also cases of male employees being sort of debased and humiliated, is how I would put it. We felt there was a real strong thread there of young women either being sexually harassed, receiving unwelcome overtures, or on the marketing side of the team, and this is what echoes the cheerleader story, being expected or told or urged to wear tight-fitting clothes, and in one case, you know, an offer from a boss to hook a young woman up with breast augmentation. And this comes from above. I mean, this is a story in which three employees of the team have lost their jobs. I think there's a much deeper story here about a culture. These events, these experiences happened over 13 years.
Bar, you and I are both parents of girls, right?
Yep.
So we're dads, we're girl dads. And in today's world, and we've talked about this when it comes to racial relations, and I've said this, you know, white people have to speak up when there's something that you know is wrong. And, you know, it's only white people around, so, oh, it's fine, right? No, it's not anymore. It's the same thing in this case. When men are around men and you see this happening, it's, you know, silence is compliance.
Check his ass.
You gotta be the one that's, I don't want this type of environment. I don't want to be around this because if I say nothing, I'm part of it. So I got to get out of there, and I got to, and if I'm in a position of leadership, I got to put a stop to this because this is how you destroy a company, a business. This is not the way you should represent yourself, and nor if you're the NFL, you don't want this because you know there's other teams where this might be going on at a smaller scale, and they better snuff it out quick.
And that's what you have to do. We have to hold each other accountable. Not saying anything is being complicit. You got to step out there. You pull that guy to the side. If he is a guy above you, it don't matter. Be a man. Say, listen, man, I'm not cool with that. I got daughters. You need to cut that out, bro. You need to go apologize to her. And if you don't, you know what I'm saying, you know, we're going to have an issue around here. It's going to be a problem. And then it's going to come to a point where they either going to have to pick you or pick me. And then I'm going to make sure that I make it known why they picked you, if that's the case. You got to hold people accountable. You got to hold your friends accountable, too. That's how we stop it. It's peer pressure. It's not being worried about some woman standing up for herself and happen to be in a confrontation with a man. No, it's up for men in this environment to be men. Be a man. That's what we're supposed to be. Check yourself, fool, or I'm going to check you for you.
Last but not least, so Zion Williams had left the NBA bubble as a family issue. And again, like I said, we certainly hope it's a family emergency, actually, and we're hoping everything will be okay. Upon his return, he's going to have to go through quarantine, of course. But the fact that the NBA opened up to 22 teams, a lot of it had to do with the fact they wanted the Pelicans involved. They wanted Zion involved in the restart in some way, somehow. And we've seen some pictures of him, talk around him. There's a lot of excitement about how he used the pandemic and the shutdown to get his body into great shape. And Andrew Lopez, who's an ESPN NBA reporter covering the Pelicans, was on Golic and Wingo talking about how Zion might have gotten stronger.
The Pels have always been good with him being around 280, 285. They said earlier on that's how he became so dominant, is playing around at that weight. They were just worried about his joints, his flexibility, and things like that. But I don't even think he really lost a lot of weight. I think a lot of it just he turned a lot more in the muscle during the break. So I don't think he's probably around that 275 mark. And I think they just want him to be leaner and take as much pressure off of his joints as possible. As long as he has this flexibility that they want, they're okay with him being there. But during that process of quarantine, where he was able to come back looking shredded as possible, I think, you know, the team kind of maybe wanted him to stay healthy, and he just showed up looking like that.
He's such a compelling athlete to just see what can he become, right? I think that's the most incredible thing about him is what can he become?
Yeah. He reminds me of Charles. Now, of course, he has more bounce than Charles, but he reminds me of Charles, early Charles, you know, the Philadelphia Sixers Charles, the one that was in shape, the best shape of his life. Now, we know the longer he played, the less shape that he remained to be in.
It's a different kind
still,
of shape.
But he, but he was still dominant. You know, when I look at Zion, he lost at least 10 pounds. I know muscle weighs more, but, you know, fat takes up a lot of surface area, and the fact that he looks so drawn in, he didn't add bulk and muscle. He looks right. Like he got smaller, just like Carmelo. Carmelo looked like he's strong, like lean. somebody put him in a dryer on high heat, and he would have a little nylon and polyester and suck them in. So he looks like that. He don't look like he put like muscles where he looks bulky or cut up, or he don't look like a Raldis Chapman. Let's say that.
Yeah, he's not all yoked up. All right, so a couple of things. First of all, I did tease that we were going to fight over LeBron. We are going to push that to next week now. All right, we're going to do all that next week.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Charlie.
No. We just didn't have time today, and we need time to fight over this.
You just need a weekend to get some more research, get some more ammunition. That's what that's all about.
Maybe. That's possible because it's not easy for me. But, no, that's going to be something we're going to get into next week. Again, next week now, that's it. This is the last full week without sports. This weekend, we've got plenty to watch, and then starting Wednesday, you've got NBA scrimmages, and then Thursday, opening day in baseball, where those games actually count. And then the week after that, forget it. We're going to have everything. Hockey. We were concerned about the start of the football training camp time, which is getting close. Is this time of year, do you start to get itchy, like you feel like you're... Like, does your body, have you been retired long enough now where your body doesn't feel like, oh, I should be getting ready for something?
No, I do. And I look at my heel and I work out hard for a couple of days. I'm like, you know what? Nah, I'm good. It's like, I'm straight.
Your body, straight. Then your joints say, what are you doing?
Because you have to take your body through, like, the part of the process is hurting and getting comfortable with hurting and then healing up and then hurting. That's the process of training. Then your feet hurt, your ankles hurt, your toes hurt.
Being uncomfortable,
exactly. And I like being comfortable.
Tom Pelissero tweets that DeMar Smith, the NFLPA executive director, was on a media conference call and said that union officials had a call last night with team doctors, and those team doctors gave an opinion with a couple of reservations that it's safe to open training camp. Is that a win? Is that something now to feel like, okay.
That's progress.
Get ready for business.
That's progress, but from what I know.
Oh, don't give me the butt. Don't do the butt thing.
But see, when you say the butt.
When you use butt, you set me up for the butt.
He just set me up for the butt.
My brother, my butt.
What I'm saying is, like, the NFLPA is worried about protecting their players, and also you hear the things coming out about 40% of the salary cap and all that type of stuff and escrow, some things that still need to be ironed out before you can put any of your members out there. And, you know, the NFL, like most sports and like most things, deadline forces action, and it's no deadlines really that they're hard up against. And I think the union wants to start the season in October. And to do that, you got to delay a little bit.
Why do they want to start in October, though?
They just want to make sure and look at what's going on with other athletes and other sports that's starting.
So you want to see the NBA, NHL,
the impact,
baseball.
Yeah, just... what happens. Because what happens is whatever happens to them, it's kind of like how the NFL is New York. The NBA, MLB, they're New York. And the NFL is Texas and Florida. And they have an opportunity to watch the other sports and see how they react and how they handle situations and what's the best protocol, because they have proof of process by that way, by watching them. Even though they're not in a bubble, you're going to be able to watch the NHL. You're going to be able to watch the other sports and see how they handle and see what happens, because whatever the numbers are on those sports, you can bet that they're going to be double or maybe triple, because they don't have the pure numbers that the NFL is going to have to try and navigate with, because they have more people on the team.
Way
than
more
other
athletes
sports.
Out there. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point. It's a lot more players that you have to keep track of and check and test and all that stuff on a daily basis, and they will be traveling as well. So I guess you don't want to just rush into it, right? But coaches and teams, and obviously the NFL as a league for the business, they want to get this thing going.
They got old ass coaches too.
So we have a weekend, Bart, where we actually will have some action. These games don't count, but you do have Mets-Yankees now that'll play each other. And actually, the Saturday
night
game.
Who are you most excited to see?
SNY, yes, and ESPN. Well,
who you're most excited to see?
I've been watching their own scrimmages, so I've seen everyone. But it's
different.
You're tuning in though, right? 7 o'clock yes. Saturday, you're tuning
it's
in.
It's different because it's different. I want to see Cespedes go against some real live ace type pitching and see if Cespedes really is back. Should I be really excited about him being the DH? He looks great, but he knows these pitchers. He knows their tendencies. I want to see him go against an opposing jersey and see if he's really back.
I want to see Judge continue to do what we've seen these last couple of days. You know, that's what I want to see, obviously, how they use the pitching. These are just scrimmages.
I want to see Andujar in outfield.
Yeah. It's a lot. Look, it's exciting. It's funny. These games aren't going to count, and yet we're going to be tuned in. I know I will. Finally, sports
in
the back.
K
Show next, Bart. Have a good weekend. See you
later.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.